This is The Takeaway. Thanks for being with us. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Let me play something for you.
Major Ridge was a Cherokee chief and leader in the early 1800s, at a time of great turmoil and change for our tribe.
You're listening to the voice of Rebecca Nagel, activist, writer, citizen of Cherokee Nation, and host of the podcast This Land from Crooked Media. This is Rebecca in the first episode of the first season, talking about the fateful treaty between Cherokee leaders and the U.S. government, which forced Cherokee Nation off their ancestral lands east of the Mississippi River and on to the deadly Trail of Tears, to what is now present-day Oklahoma. A quarter of the Cherokee population died on that treacherous journey.
Major Ridge and John Ridge, two generations of my family, were killed on the same day. They were assassinated for a choice they made. That decision brought our tribe to this land on the promise that it would be ours for as long as the waters run and the grass grows. But the United States didn't keep that promise.
Major Ridge and other Cherokee leaders who signed the Treaty of New Echota relinquished ancestral lands for a paltry $5 million. But Nagel complicates the idea that these men were simply treacherous or foolish. Theirs were almost impossible choices. And by Nagel's recounting, at this moment in the 1830s, the Cherokee faced the choice of either retaining tribal sovereignty by relinquishing ancestral lands, or keeping those lands, but being fully absorbed into the U.S.
In other words, there would still be Cherokee people living on Cherokee land, but no tribe, no self-governance, no nation.
Today, nearly 200 years after the Treaty of New Echota displaced the Cherokee in forced migration west, Cherokee Nation is the country's largest tribe. And the treaty which pushed them off their lands also contains an unfulfilled article, a guaranteed right to send a non-voting delegate to the House of Representatives.
For two centuries, Congress has failed to honor that promise.
This is Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. in a PSA produced by Cherokee Nation earlier this month.
However, the Treaty of New Echota has no expiration date. The obligation to seat a Cherokee Nation delegate is as binding today as it was in 1835.
Kim Tahee is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, Director of Government Relations for Cherokee Nation, and Senior Vice President of Government Relations for Cherokee Nation Businesses. In 2019, Chief Hoskin designated Kim Tahee as the first Cherokee Nation delegate to the U.S. House of Representatives. Delegate Tahee, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hello, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
So have you been seated in this position that is part of the 1835 treaty?
I have not been seated yet, and that's something that we are working on to get completed by the end of this year. We've asked Congress, the House of Representatives in particular, to hold a hearing and to seat the delegate this year.
Now, I walked through the way that Rebecca Nagel tells the story of the treaty and of the forced removal, in part to highlight the issues, the challenges between political sovereignty and political inclusion. Talk to me about the current space of those debates relative to this seat.
Well, you know, in our history, you know, there's still fights going on today. Our history, the removal was an effort to for the United States to try to expand their territories, right, to the West because of discovery of gold and such. And we prevailed in those court proceedings. We all went all the way to the Supreme Court. But, you know, John Marshall infamously said, Andrew Jackson infamously said that John Marshall made his decision, not let him enforce it. So there are still battles going on today, you know, regarding, state encroachment on tribal lands, And so we're still fighting some of those same battles, post-removal all these years later. But look, we have a treaty right that has expressly stated, and it is a mandate that Cherokee Nation shall have a delegate in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Now, what's the value of non-voting representation? There are some other bodies that have this. For example, the city of Washington, D.C., which is not a state, not represented in the U.S. Senate or House with a voting delegate, but there is a non-voting delegate. What can we learn, for example, from the D.C. non-voting delegate about the value of non-voting representation?
Sure. Delegates have lots of authorities in the House of Representatives. They can vote in committee. They can sit in committees. They can, you know, rise in leadership. They can introduce legislation, amend legislation, speak on the House floor. They just can't vote on the House floor. And that is the legal distinction between a delegate and a member of Congress.
I'm wondering about also this question of enfranchisement. In our conversations in recent days about Puerto Rico, again, in the context of the hurricane and thinking about questions of Puerto Rican statehood, we've been talking about like individual enfranchisement, but not sort of the island itself of Puerto Rico being enfranchised in the U.S. Senate, because again, not a state. Help us understand for Cherokee who are individually enfranchised, right, who can vote, but who are not enfranchised as a nation at this point, right? Not represented in the U.S. House. Is this simply about fulfilling 1835's promise, or is there something enfranchising?
Well, it's absolutely, you know, it's absolutely fulfilling this treaty right, right? This country, you know, through its policies, made a promise to the Cherokee Nation, where a quarter of our population perished, right? And part of that promise was that we shall have a delegate in the House of Representatives. The act of honoring that treaty right would provide some small measure of justice to those who lost their lives during that forced removal. And so I think it absolutely is something that would give Cherokee Nation an additional voice, a seat at the table. This delegate position would represent Cherokee Nation, the government. You know, our citizens, we have 437,000 citizens throughout the United States that live in a variety of areas in a variety of ways. And, you know, through this treaty, it would send a strong message that this country keeps its word.
I'm interested in whether or not, let me ask this differently. Have there been previous attempts to seat a delegate? Has Cherokee Nation previously, across this nearly 200 years, attempted to seat a delegate?
No, we haven't. But if you keep in mind that, you know, for forced removal in the 1830s, you know, really, it, you know, in addition to displacing the government, we had to rebuild a nation after forced removal. It took time to rebuild a nation. After forced removal, bad stuff didn't stop. Mm-hmm. Congress kept enacting laws that were designed to dismantle our governmental authorities and to take away our lands. And so if you think about all that it took from the 19th century into the 70s, it wasn't until 1975 that Congress approved a law to give Cherokees, once again, the legal authority to elect its own chief. Think about that, you know, how long it took to rebuild a nation after removal and Congress's role it had in dismantling the nation. And you know, frankly, you know, curbing our ability to rebuild. And so we fought hard to do all that. We feel like we're in a place where we can finally get the delegate seated.
I'm wondering about the ways that this decision now to lay claim to, you know, again, this promise in the treaty. Is it at all connected to the fairly recent decision by the Supreme Court in McGirt to acknowledge the treaty around the space now understood to be Oklahoma still is in force, right? That it does not end just because of, as you pointed out, bad stuff did not stop happening.
Correct. You know, we talk about the 1835, the treaty right for the delegate. But our 1866 treaty, which was our last treaty with the United States, affirms all prior treaties that were not otherwise inconsistent with that treaty. So that treaty still stands. You're talking about the McGirt decision and such. And so Cherokee Nation has had its recent court victories where our own reservation was reaffirmed. And it interpreted that 1866 treaty. 1866 treaty is the similar treaty of the Muscogee tribe in the McGirt decision was interpreted. And the treaty was similar to ours. similar provisions, with regard to our reservation boundaries. And so the courts have had a hand in reaffirming our reservations. You know, we're still battling it out in the courts today. The state of Oklahoma didn't like that particular ruling, but we're still fighting in courts. But the law is clear. The law is clear in the court decisions that reaffirm our reservation, in the interpretation of our treaties from 1866, and including the 1835 treaty right to have a delegate to Congress.
I'm wondering if you have an opportunity to take a seat as the Cherokee Nation delegate, the extent to which you see this as representing exclusively Cherokee Nation or an opportunity for a more pan-Indigenous representation?
Well, certainly I'm mindful of the fact that I'm there because the delegate is representing the Cherokee Nation, but our tribe is pretty similar to other tribes in what we advance in Congress when it comes to federal funding, healthcare infrastructure, agriculture, drought issues, and such. And so I think that having Cherokee Nation's delegate at the seat at the table would be an additional voice for Indian country.
Now, when you begin to sort of lay out a framework for me, tell me, what would your agenda look like? What are the key issues that you'd be fighting for?
Well, as I mentioned, we'll cross that bridge when we get there, but for sure, appropriations, absolutely appropriations, housing, addressing murdered and missing Indigenous women issues, protecting our language are some of the issues that are critical to us.
Delegate Kim Tahi is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation and is the first Cherokee Nation delegate to the U.S. House of Representatives and is making a claim on her right to take that seat. Kim, thank you for joining The Takeaway.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.